This is the old Good Morning Man, Kermit Edney, with program 84 in a 260-part series dealing with the happenings and the people who made things happen over the WHKP years, the past 50 years. The format's the same as that employed for 25 years by the great Frank Fitzsimmons in his review of the earlier years, so we simply call this Where Fitz Left Off. And today, the great beer and wine election of 1960 that tore the city emotionally asunder. Shortly after New Year's Day in 1960, the battle lines were drawn. The dry forces exuding confidence after having won a beer and wine election in 1955 and a liquor store election in 1956 started mapping out their campaign. However, in this election, a group had been organized of some 100 supporters of the legal sale of beer and wine for off-premises consumption only. Remembering the proliferation of beer joints up and down Main Street, the pro-beer and wine people had made it clear in the proposition of off-premises sale that nobody wanted to go back to the way we were. Further, the pro-beer and wine forces contacted the National Breweries Trade Group, the Breweries Foundation, and they responded by sending one James A. Stutz to Hendersonville to aid the committee in the election. In the meantime, the dry forces imported a firebrand evangelist from South Carolina to conduct meetings in churches throughout the community. The efforts of the dry forces came to a climax on the Saturday before the election when they staged a giant parade down Main Street featuring automobiles in various stages of wreckage covered with ketchup or red liquids of sorts. Inside the cars were people also smeared with red liquids and signs galore lambasting demon rum and the high cost paid by any community that allows it to be sold. The Wets, tutored by Jim Stutz, who, by the way, always wore the same James Bond-type trench coat, which caused him to be easily set apart as not being local, Stutz insisted on registering as many new voters as possible, and according to the late Raymond English, who was named registrar for the special election, some 800 new voters had been registered. The media was swamped with ads for both sides, the dry forces making the election a religious issue, the Wets arguing that nobody had stopped the sale of beer from neighboring counties, and it was better to legally control the sale of beer and wine and gain the revenue therefrom than to encourage locals to truck the products in from the county line. So the stage was set for the bitterest election ever to be held in Hendersonville. When the polls opened at 6:30 March 2, 1960, a heavy sleet was falling, and the temperature was 21 degrees. When the weather warmed a bit during the day, the sleet changed to snow. By the time the polls closed at 6:30 that night, 12 inches of sleet and snow had fallen, and side streets were virtually impassable. The roads south of the city, U.S. 25 and U.S. 176, were closed because of slides. But all day long, the voters came. Both sides had either four-wheel drive vehicles or tires with chains. As the voters came and went, tensions and feelings ran high in City Hall. And an all-time record voter turnout had occurred. 1,720 people in this weather had cast ballots in that election, and the long count began. Both sides had watchers gathered around the big table in the office, which was then adjacent to what was then the mayor's office. There were frequent challenges to ballots, and the election officials would then have to make a ruling on each. Finally, the count was finished at just after 9 o'clock. Now, the worst embarrassment WHKP ever suffered occurred that night. Half our staff was out with the flu. The other half had served yeoman's time in keeping the news moving in such horrendous weather. And other than myself, we had one young man we used once in a while for relief, a young apprentice with no training. My last instruction to him as I left the station, wait for me to call you and then simply switch down to City Hall. You don't need to say anything. Meanwhile, out in Flat Rock, the noted attorney W.B.W. Howe was in bed with the flu, bored to death, and fidgety to hear news on the outcome of the election. Not one never to practice a practical joke, he picked up the phone and called our young man at the station. Well, the next thing I know, I get a call at City Hall from Harold Worley, excitedly telling me he had a pair of snowshoes and he had loaned them to me. What for? I asked, not knowing that our young man had bought Bill Howe's prank, hook, line, and sinker, and our young man had breathlessly announced on the air that a man had broken into the counting room at City Hall, had stolen the ballot boxes, and made off on a dog sled, and that we needed snowshoes to track him down. Wow. I quickly had our young man switched to me at City Hall, where I apologized profusely for the shenanigans. But to this day, we've never lived it down. The Wets won that election by almost a 2-1 margin, but the fight had only begun. We'll finish the story tomorrow. Members of this seventh child of a seventh child are lucky enough to have been born here, the good sense never to leave, and with a job he's loved all of his life. Sursum corda, as we approach the next 50 years.